Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the pick and troll podcast, you might say. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I've got Matt Moore Skyping on the line. This is your new and improved, and probably the last time I'll use it, for a slow intro, because apparently my intros have been very fast lately. I hate doing intros, and so this is my way of compromising. Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're having a battle over the speed of intro. So, explain to me your hatred of intros. Just that they're forced?
I don't know. I feel like you clicked on the podcast or you downloaded or something. Like, you know what it is. I find it unlikely.
Like studio shows, they shouldn't say, like, welcome, like Tim Brando shouldn't say, welcome everyone to college basketball on CBS.
I mean, he's on the radio as well, correct?
Tim's on TV usually, but he has a radio show, yes.
Yeah, the radio show. Like, you can come across a radio dial and not really know what it is. This is, I mean, you're clicking on, like, you are intentional. There's no way this is going to be found on, like, some Westwood One station somewhere, right?
So, like, Jim Brown didn't say, welcome to, you know, or our, you know, whoever's hosting shouldn't say, welcome to whatever our CBS football show is. I can't remember the name of it.
Football on Sunday, right? Is that might not be
football right. Sunday thing.
Welcome to Patriots Live.
Should they just start talking? Is that because I thought about that too? Like when I do podcast, like the podcast I like, it's just people just start talking.
Yeah, I'm socially awkward enough. You know that. I don't need. I mean, I just feel like it would be better if they. I want it to be where it sounds like they're coming halfway into a conversation. And right. They have no idea who anybody is, and they're trying to catch up. I feel like that makes a more active listener. It's a terrible idea, but that's what I'd like, because it makes me feel...
Yeah, we don't do that here. We do forced...
It makes me feel more comfortable.
Here at CBS, we like forced and remarkably overbranded. That's really...
Well, actually, I mean, no one from CBS has said anything to me. It's just been the listeners be like, why are you saying it so fast? This doesn't... Like, I don't even know what you're saying. My best friend listened to it for the first time this weekend and was like, what is the name of the podcast? I couldn't understand you. So that's a plus.
So anyway.
speaking of plus, we had a plus game on Friday?
We had a plus game on Friday. We got not a short week. You've arranged quite a bevy of stuff for us later in the week when you're on vacation.
Yes, I am going to Vegas early Wednesday morning. I will be there until Sunday, and I'll get home right in time to go to the Wolves-Bulls game on Sunday night. And hopefully Derrick Rose will be there. Probably won't be, but I'm holding out hope. And so during that time, I won't be able to record a podcast Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I'm lining up guests. I'm lining up shows. I'm being professional. This is the most professional show I've ever done.
That says a lot about both of us.
Yes.
Says quite a bit about you and I right now.
Yes, absolutely.
You got some great guests lined up. I will not be a part of it, so I'm taking a podcast break. I've got some time off from yapping.
Yeah, have Matt on your radio show. He'll yap for 45 minutes.
I probably will have, this is the time of year when I start getting radio requests like crazy. Everyone's like, come on, and I need you to talk about the same five things you've talked about 1,900 times this week. How good are the Heat, Matt? Well, they're good enough to win 22 games in a row.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. They're pretty good. That's what I like to describe. So you're going to Vegas during, is there some sort of sporting event going on this weekend?
Well, I believe there is March Madness on CBS.
And the Turner family, right, of networks.
Yes. I went 2 years ago, went with my lady friend and a friend of ours and his brother-in-law or uncle. No, his uncle. I don't know. The guy is older, but he acts like one of us. Like, he's a blast. His name's Brian. He's a really, like, fun guy to be around. I have no idea how old he is. And we went for the opening weekend of March Madness and bet on a bunch of games legally and had a great time. Didn't get to go last year, so we decided to do it again this year.
Very nice. I'm very excited for you. I was like going. I've gone somewhere for the tournament. I think the last 3 years I've gone somewhere for the tournament, and this is my first year not. Didn't I'm low on the cashola because my wife's in grad school and has sucked my wallet dry as all wives do. Just kidding out there, women. I love you.
I'm just lucky that my lady friend has enough money to pay for us both.
Your sugar mama can fly to Vegas to gamble on the tournament. We're going to be doing later this week, we're going to have a we're bringing back something we did in 2011, the NBA tournament bracket, looking at if we were to see the NBA in a 16-team format, what they would look like.
Yes.
And it'll be outside of the actual tournament. And looking at, you know, what it would look like if we only played one-off games, if there could be more upsets than there are in a seven-game series.
Spoiler alert, Miami Heat, no lower than a 5 seed.
Probably going to get a good draw from the committee, I would imagine.
Right.
The New York Knicks, probably not so much.
No.
But a good question, though, kind of leading into our subject for first thing to talk about this morning is, you know, where would you see Denver? You know, where would you put Denver? Because another quality win.
Well, here's the thing about seeding. If we're going to do it in, like, the college style, momentum matters. You know, RPI matters, strength of schedule and all that. And Denver would be hitting the tournament at the exact right time. I think they would probably be, like, no lower than the fourth seed, right?
Fourth overall,
yeah.
Yeah, they'd probably be a one seed, which is and that would be huge because they'd likely end up in a draw where they play close to home.
Yeah.
Like the Jayhawks playing in Kansas City.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is an utter disaster for me. As a Missouri graduate, this is horrible. I don't know why I still care. I really don't care. We're out of the conference. Missouri's, we're going to be talking about the tournament, just deal with it. It's the biggest sports story of the week.
Yeah.
The NBA, nothing relevant. And
you filled out a bracket anyway, so don't act like you don't care.
Yeah, don't judge us. Get off your high horse, listener.
Yeah. Get on a Shetland pony instead. Get on a low horse.
My wife goes to CSU, and they're playing Missouri, which is where she and I went to school.
Yeah.
So it's like the battle of proxy wife, and it's, you know, she's got messed up rules about who to root for anyway. She roots for Nebraska in football over Missouri, which makes me insane.
Oh, that can't go well.
Oh, God, I get so angry. I'm just like, you paid Missouri, like, bazillions of dollars. Like, they have your money. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the NBA.
Let's do it. Speaking of the Denver Nuggets.
Grizzlies Nuggets. I was there, and it was a great game.
That was an awesome game. I want seven games of that. I really do hope that they end up the 4-5 because I want to see that series. I want it to go seven. I don't care who wins. I just want to see that series.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating contrast.
It is.
Both coaches said that before the game, and they talked about it, and it was really interesting to see because I was fascinated watching these matchups go because you got like Andre Miller. At one point, was guarding Ed Davis. Wilson Chandler was guarding Marc Gasol and did a pretty good job of it in the post.
Yeah.
You've got Tony Allen occasionally matching up on Ty Lawson. You've got like all these really weird things, and Zach Randolph versus Zebo Edwards versus Fareed is independently a very fascinating matchup.
Yeah.
You know, the Grizzlies actually, they got it into the kind of game that they wanted. It was tough. It was a defensive battle. You know, neither team shot well. It was slower pace, I think, than it was definitely slower pace than Denver wanted. Both teams went on these huge runs, and that's at the end of the game. I don't feel like either team felt like they had control of the game at any point.
Yeah, I think that was the most fun part about it, is it's two completely contrasting styles that no, like neither team really had a feel for the game because of that, and yet it was close the entire time.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, a lot of this, Memphis got bad offense. I think you could probably say if Memphis's offense was better, they probably win that game and going away. But it's not, and that's one of the reasons there's a balance there. If you're elite on offense and elite on defense, then you win 22 games in a row. But, you know, for the rest of the mortals,
right,
there's kind of a cross there. But this is something I have been trying to tell people, you know, and we've talked about Denver a lot on this podcast. And I don't think there's a lot of reason to talk about it more. But, you know, moving aside the superstar question, one of the issues with them has always been, well, yeah, they've got all this offense. They can score in all these ways, but they can't defend. And that's the real problem, is if you can't go to your primary options, if you don't have a primary option, when the game slows down and you can't defend, how are you going to, you know, keep up. Their defense is really pretty good this year. Denver has a pretty good defense. They don't have a great defense. They've got a pretty good defense. Since December 15th, I think they're top 10 in defensive efficiency.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Carl about this the other day. That's really difficult to do for a fast-paced team. You just can't do it. Like, fast-paced teams just give up a lot of points.
Right.
There's not a, you know, whether there's correlation or causation there, it just so happens that most fast-paced teams tend to give up a lot of points because when the action's freer, you've got more opportunities for, you've got, you know, a much smaller margin for error, which is a hard thing to put on defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you look at the best defensive efficiency the Suns could pull when they were 7 seconds or less was 12 or 13, which is really good considering how they play, but they were a team where everyone just joked that they were giving up points so they could go score more points quicker, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of seems to be the stigma with fast-paced teams. And you see that with the Rockets right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so Denver being able to produce efficiently on offense and then being able to turn it around and really at times lock down and cause havoc. I mean, when Corey Brewer gets in those passing lanes, when they get loose, it's bad.
Dastardly.
He is. That's a great word for him. He is dastardly.
Yeah.
I'm stealing that for a feature I'm doing on him.
Go for it.
The dastardly Corey Brewer. When Iguodala's forcing the ball and forcing the pass, you know, locks him up and then forces him to get rid of the ball and then Brewer ball sharks on it, it's really dangerous. I do think that Memphis really missed Darrell Arthur in that game and that his impact will be pretty big if they play in a series. I still think this is probably going to be the 4-5. I think it's likely going to be Denver with the 4. I still think the Clippers win the 3, despite the fact that the gap is significantly narrowed. There's a decent chance that either Memphis or the Grizzlies sneak in and steal the 3, but I still feel like the Clippers are going to just take care of enough business to manage. I think they're going to win it by a game or a game or two.
Yeah, they're a game up on Memphis right now. Memphis and Denver right now.
Yeah, after Memphis, Memphis also hit a really rough part of their schedule at the worst time.
Yeah,
that's part of my reasoning is there's a site called PlayoffStats.com that actually has Denver with the hardest stretch run for any team, but from looking at the schedule and looking at it in context, realistically, Memphis has got a nightmare coming up. They've got a really tough schedule to finish out. Denver's is up and down, but they've got winnable games, I think. So I think we're going to finish where we're at now, except Denver's going to get home court.
Yeah, it's what I mean. Denver is what I've said about them for. Like, I still have the exact same concerns about them in the postseason, but as a regular season team, they are a pain in the behind to deal with.
Well, and if there's any team that they can maybe take out in the playoffs, it's probably Memphis.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I've decided that assuming health across the board for both teams, whichever team gets home court advantage, that's who I'll take in 7.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's looking. I keep thinking San Antonio has made room, and they haven't.
No, it's just a game.
It's just a game. Oklahoma City just keeps right. They're right there.
Yeah.
That one's going to go down to the wire. That's the really crazy part. No team in the West is going to get a rest unless Popovich just pulls a plug and is like, screw it, we're done with worrying about seeds.
Which is very possible.
Right. Because they've got five on the Clippers, and the Clippers aren't closing that gap.
Right.
Actually, let me run that right now. Yeah, so San Antonio's magic number to make sure they can get no lower than 2 is 11.
Yeah.
And that's combined wins and losses by the Spurs and Clippers.
Right.
So all they need is 6 more wins and 5 more Clippers losses for the rest of the year.
Considering they're winning over 75% of their games this season.
Looking pretty good.
Looks good.
Yeah, and Parker's supposed to get back earlier than expected.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Miami's first seed magic number it's not only in single digits, I think it's
gotta 6. It's got to be like 4, right? 5,
it's
4 or 5?
6.
6? Jesus.
Yeah, right, yesterday, it's 6. That, like, they could conceivably have this thing locked up in the next 2 weeks.
There is an 11.5 game lead on the second seed. That's getting into the same historic range as their win streak right now. Like, that doesn't happen very often.
You know, Simmons mentioned this on NBA Countdown, and I wanted to ask you, if They now have tied for the second longest winning streak.
Yes.
I would not actually be tempted to put them amongst the great all time regular season teams right now. Like, they'd be on the list somewhere, but not like really high. If they get this thing up to 26-27, I'm going to be like, okay, I think they probably enter the conversation.
I mean, I guess it just depends on. Like, no one thinks they're going to win the rest of their games, right? So it depends on where you think they're going to end up. Like, if they end up with 65 wins, that's very good. But it's not all that historic, you know?
Right.
I mean, the best they can do is win the rest of their games and end up with 68. I guess if 65 wins plus throw in possibly the second longest winning streak and the longest winning streak in the three-point era, that's, you know, I guess that you couple those together, that puts them up there.
That's a pretty strong performance.
It's a strong case.
I
don't know. People have found a way in hindsight to, like, kind of knock the Bulls winning 72. Like, oh, the league was watered down. And, you know, it was a weak schedule, blah, blah, blah. They won 72 games. I don't care what the league was.
See, for me, like, the nobody's going to touch 72 unless they top that number. Like, you can't, even though I'm big on context, I'm not saying it's all, like, I'm always preaching context and process over results. Unless you topple that number, you can't, just because it's too hard. Your process has to be too good to win 72, even in a watered down league. It's just not possible.
Well, I was talking to, I think Miami had pushed it to 18 games. 18 or 19. And I talked to J.J. Barea, and I said, you know, you haven't been on a team that's had close to this kind of streak. He's like, oh, we had some really good ones my rookie year in Dallas. You know, that was the year we lost our first four games, and then we ended up winning 67. He's like, we had some good streaks there, but no, nothing like this. This is even in the championship season, like, you know, we never felt like we were in a zone like that. And that's kind of crazy. Like, he was on a team that won 67 games. He was on a team that won a championship. And he didn't even feel like they had gone through a similar stretch like that. Not just like, oh, well, they didn't win the same amount of games in a row, but that's, it's like a stretch of dominance. And that, like, it's not just the games that they're, you know, how many games in a row they're winning. It's the way they're winning them. And he didn't feel like they were quite at that level.
Yeah.
I mean, he felt that 67 win team was up there, but not quite there.
Right.
67 wins. That's a lot.
That's quite a few.
That's quite a few wins.
I thought this was interesting, actually. Going back to, I'm just looking at the standings and kind of looking at this. Going back to Denver real quick, I was looking at their schedule and I kind of went through and said, okay, they're likely to win this one, lose that one. They've got a decent chance at 57 wins, and that was with me being pretty conservative in terms of with wins and losses the rest of the way out. That's six games over where I put them for over-under.
Yeah.
That's six games over where I put him for over-under, and with a murderous nightmare opening schedule and a terrible four-game road trip heading into the All-Star break.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I damn near put George Karl on Coach of the Year list this week for baseline awards. I was awful close to it just because, really, since December 15th, what they've done is crazy.
Yeah.
They've been a ridiculously good team. There are so many good teams in this league this year. It's why I'm confused when people are like, well, is it really that tough? I'm like, you know, because they were asking that question yesterday about Miami. And everyone really points to, like, the East. I'm like, well, Miami didn't just play East teams, I don't think, during the stretch. I haven't necessarily checked, but they had to have played some Western Conference teams.
I know they played the Wolves.
Well, that doesn't help my case.
No, they've played, I mean, in the stretch, they played Houston, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Blazers, the Thunder, Kings, Memphis, Wolves.
Yeah, that's a bunch of good teams.
Yeah, that's a good chunk. And those were, I mean, the Houston, Clippers, Lakers, Blazers, Thunder, that was all in a row. You know? I mean, the majority of that was at home, but still.
Well, I want to get your thoughts on this. We talk so much about the East being terrible, and I think that I'm willing to say past Boston, like, one, I would put Boston above Chicago at this point. realistically. Like, Chicago on down, the East is terrible. Like, even though I like Milwaukee and enjoy watching them play, they're not a good team. So that, I can see, is terrible. But I don't feel like the East is... Like, I don't look at those teams and I'm like, oh, they're so bad. I'm like, look, Indiana loses a bunch of games that they should win.
Yeah.
That's Indiana's problem, is they just lose. And we see this with teams that are skewed to one side of the offensive-defensive scale. Houston does this too. If you can't score and a team gets hot, even though you're defending them, if they're scoring and you're not, you're going to lose that game.
Right.
You know? And then on the other side of it, even if you're scoring, if you're allowing point after point after point, you're going to wind up losing a lot of games. And so, you know, by that token, I feel like Indiana overall is a very good team. They just lose a bunch of games that they should win. Overall, I really like that. I really like what they've put together and the season they've put together. I just really hate some of their losses. The loss of Boston a few weeks ago was really interminable. The loss of Toronto was really terrible.
Yeah.
You know, the loss of Miami was – Miami made a statement, and that was impressive to me. But I still feel like Indiana has a decent shot at least putting a fight up against Miami in the playoffs.
Oh, I think it can go six games. I don't think there's a chance they can beat Miami, but I think they can make it really hard to get past them.
Put a little scare in.
Yeah.
Just a little scare.
Which actually is worse for the West, because if that's going to be that team focuses them. They face the best defense in the league before they go to the finals. Like, that's a pretty good sharpening tool.
I have a hard time figuring out what to think of Brooklyn's season. I go back on it a lot. Because there are times when I'm like, you know, they really have had a pretty good year. You know, like, you know, they've won – they're 38-28. They're 13, you know – they're 13.5 games back, sure. But they're 10 games over 500. That's really good.
Yeah, I think the thing that clouds the way we look at Brooklyn is you see a pretty, not a low ceiling, but a ceiling just above where they are right now. So, like, you don't look at their season and think, all right, next year, this is how they improve, right? Because they're locked in for 4 years with all those big contracts. So it's just going to be hard for them to improve as a team. You know, their whole goal going into Brooklyn was they had to be a playoff team and a pretty good one at that. And right now, they're a top four seed in the East. Like, that's a success based on what they were trying to do, but do you really see them going much higher? I mean, Deron Williams can play better, Brook Lopez can get better, but do you really see them going that much higher than what they are right now?
Well, I mean, here's a good place of where they're at. Like, I feel like, oh wow, they're a four seed and they've got a shot at the division and all these good things and they've accomplished this. There's two things for me. One, it's their salary.
Yeah.
Where I can't get past the fact, I'm like, look, you paid for this level of team. If you did not get this level of team, then you screwed up somewhere.
Right.
You paid for a tier for this tier, and you did not get it. It's one of the reasons I'm always impressed. Like, you know, Indiana for years was putting together quality teams, even this year, put together quality teams on a budget. That's really impressive to me.
Right.
Like, that's getting great value for your buck. It's too bad that the fans don't give a damn, but, you know, they don't. Versus Brooklyn, they paid for a title contender, and they got whatever this is, and it's just not that, and it's a pretty good team. But it's also one where if Brooklyn ends up in the four, and they've got – let me put it this way. They're the one team in the playoffs I feel like the Hawks might be able to get past in the first round.
Yeah, I think I agree.
I'm not saying I would pick them, but versus any other team
– I might pick them.
You know, like Chicago, New York, Indiana, Miami, Boston – I'm taking the other team to knock out the Hawks.
Yeah. Because
that's what happens to the Hawks. But Brooklyn, I feel like, could be the one team that Atlanta, you know, bites in the ass.
Oddly enough, you know who Brooklyn became? The Hawks of the last 2 years.
Yep.
Before this season.
Almost like they got a bunch of their players.
Yeah, I mean, and I still like Joe Johnson. I think the way people view him strictly because of the contract is unfair. I think he's a very good player. He's not as good this year as he was last year. Last year he was awesome. So I like that, but you just have to be honest with your fan base and yourself with what you are. Like, you're not a title contender and you're not going to become a title contender as constructed. Like, you're just not. And if you're good, like, being a top four seed and getting playoff revenue and giving, you know, your fans hopefully like a a dip into the second round, and you know, that's a fine business decision. It's not competing for a title, but not everybody can compete for a title. So as long as you're not pretending like, yeah, we're building something here, we're on our way, then I'm fine with it.
New York's going to face either Atlanta, Chicago, conceivably Brooklyn, or Boston.
Boston's only 2.5 games out of the 3 seed, out of like knocking New York back a little bit.
They could win the division. That was nuts when I found that this week.
Yeah, it's very close.
Like, Boston has a great chance at winning the division after that horrific start. Yeah. That's where I was kind of like, okay, maybe I'm wrong on this whole regular season thing. Maybe we do need to shorten this damn thing.
They play the Knicks twice, too. They play them twice in a 6-day period.
And this is the weird thing with New York is I wonder if the injuries right now are actually kind of a good thing because it allows them to get through their worst stretch and not have to really face the reality of who they are. And maybe they can get a little bit of a vibe going when Melo gets back and use it as a pick-me-up to get out of this funk. Because, I mean, they're just it's becoming, you know, because that's the whole thing is all these losses are piling up, and it's like, well, they didn't have Melo and they didn't have Chandler. And I'm always like, yes, but there's also something to be said for the way that you play regardless of what the outcome is. They were going to lose those games, but it just shows you who they are. And their identity is really messed up right now.
I don't know. I mean, the Denver game was certainly bad. The Golden State game was bad. But
Portland game?
The Portland game wasn't great, but I didn't think it was awful. Like, they played against the best team in this 4-game losing streak. They played their best of the streak, you know? Like, they played the Clippers pretty decently.
Yeah.
They only put up 80 points, but in terms of, like, they did a decent job against them, and maybe you can build with that. I don't know. It really just all depends on when they get Chandler back and when they get Melo back.
What's success this season for New York? Is it making the Eastern Conference Finals?
No, I think it's second round.
Just get out of the first round?
Yeah, if they can get out of the first round, I think that's a success.
Like, if they were to beat Chicago with Rose in a 3-6 matchup, I'd feel pretty good about that.
Honestly, even if they beat Chicago and Rose doesn't play, like, I think they need to get to the second round. They need to show some kind of growth. I don't know that that's actual growth, but at least, like, with smoke and mirrors, it looks like growth that they got to the second round.
But after the start of the season, I think fans are still going to be massively disappointed.
Sure, but you can point to
just use the injuries and say, oh, that's what happened. Because we've seen that happen before.
I honestly think that's a part of it. I don't think that's all of it, but I think that's a decent enough chunk. Well, I mean, Raymond Felton getting
They started falling off in basically January. It was a slow slide, and then the injuries happened, and they fell off a cliff.
Right, but when Felton got injured, they lost all of their dribble penetration.
Yeah.
And that's where they got the 3-point movement and everything, and they just they haven't been able to regain that, but that's when they lost it. So you can point to that, and then there's a Melo injury, and there's Amari, and there's, you know, when he started playing well, then he deals with the knee thing again, and there's Carmelo with his knee. Like, the knee injury isn't everything, but it's a legitimate excuse for a significant fall off. Maybe not everything in that fall off, but for a good chunk of it.
Just weird to me because it's like
they also played in over their heads.
Yeah,
for that time.
But here's what makes me crazy though, right? They hit all these threes, but they were hitting open threes, and that's why Knicks fans were like, "Why can't we sustain this? They're all open threes." And I was like, "That's a good point." Like that, you know, if you're creating an open look, and that's the crazy thing about this. Like, okay, bad things are going against you. Like, you've got injuries, and the schedule's getting tougher, and, like, especially with the injuries. How do you overcome that? And it's you rely on the system, and you create high percentage looks. And they're like the opposite. It's like the harder things get for them, the harder they make it on themselves.
Sure, because J.R. Smith gets more involved.
Yeah. It's just, by the way, that Robbie Callen, the squiggly line draw play, he did that again yesterday. I gift it. Like, he's actually in his mind. I think he thinks that's a set.
Maybe it is.
He lost the handle, threw it back out, got it back, threw it back out, got it back, dribbled in a circle, and then took a fadeaway.
It's a good play.
No. He airballed it.
Well, I mean, clearly the air conditioning.
Like, I don't know. And here's what really kills me is people think that it's like a personal thing with me. and Smith, and I'm like, look, yesterday he ran off of a curl screen baseline, caught it. They leveled Thomas leveled a perfect screen. He got an open catch and shoot jumper baseline. It was a mid range jump shot, but it was catch and shoot, and it was perfect. It was beautiful. Just do that.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me crazy because I'm like, just don't stop dribbling. Stop trying to create and stop trying to take these shots over multiple guys. He took a shot with two guys' hands in his face. I took a snapshot of it and posted on Twitter. There's two guys' hands in his face, and he thinks that's a good look.
Okay, not to absolve him of anything, but Raymond Felton has been awful. And if Felton isn't getting dribble penetration and creating things for the offense off that, J.R. Smith kind of has to be the one to dribble penetrate. Now, he's not making good decisions with that, but if you put that kind of onus on him, it's unlikely you're going to get great results.
But it's just like, fine, dribble penetrate, but dribble penetrate and then kick out, start the rotation, you'll find the open three.
Yeah, but then you're so much closer to the basket than you just were. You got to get up a shot. I feel like he knows it's the year of the Gunner.
He's aware of it. That's certainly true.
Another thing, this wouldn't correct everything, but it's kind of like it perfectly sums up the way the Knicks are struggling. Steve Novak at one point was like 0-for-12 from 3-point range. Like nothing is going right for them.
Yeah, that's true.
If he's going 0-for-12 in a stretch, you know that it's just not their week.
You know, Chee's down and Kurt Thomas got hurt yesterday.
I gotta look at the numbers, but I'm telling you, once Sheed went down, everything fell apart. Yeah, man, forget
ever
Felton.
Since you said that, that's all I can think.
I know I said Felton just now, but it's Sheed.
And on the flip side of things, you have the Lakers, who lose Kobe Bryant.
They have somehow become the Celtics.
Here's what I think is funny, is when they hired D'Antoni, you and I talked about all the players that were going to benefit, and two of them were Jody Meeks. I said Antoine Jameson was going to have a lot of opportunities in this kind of set. Said Earl Clark, which he's faded. You've been right on that one. I want month by month comparisons at the end of the year. You know what I mean? They have an Earl Clark podcast, which shows how sad we are. At the end of the year.
Tune in August. Earl Clark week.
And the other guy I said was Steve Blake.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Blake, who Lakers fans have just killed over the last 2 years, killed. All of a sudden, everyone's like, "Hey, he's pretty good." It's like, "Well, yeah."
You open up
a competent veteran point guard into a system which makes competent veteran point guards great.
Yeah,
it's going to have good effects. Without Kobe,
it's impressive that as bad as they've been in this whole time, that they're 4 games over .500 at this point.
I don't know what to do with them right now because I don't want to overreact.
I think
there's a part of me that's honestly like, look, let's say they even do make the 8. I know San Antonio is going to come into this. You know, you got Kobe Bryant going up against San Antonio. That's personal. You got Dwight Howard going up against San Antonio, and I've always been a believer that San Antonio struggles with hyper-athletic bigs.
Yeah.
Dwight's looking great right now.
He really does look good.
Nash has got a pretty good understanding of the Spurs and also has a big thing against beating them.
Yeah.
They're able to spread the floor. Nobody's going to be able to lock down Parker. He's going to have a monster series, but it's one where you start looking and you're like, if they topple San Antonio, are they going to face, only Oklahoma City? That's the only thing left for them that's going to be a real threat to them.
No, because maybe the confidence will have built up by then. And they'll be in a good zone, but I mean the Clippers are still better than them.
Man, you're hot. You are strong on that clip show.
Well, Chris Paul exists, which helps. And I think Denver is better than the Lakers right now. Clearly,
I said that the other day.
Memphis.
I said to a guy in Denver media. I said, their actual Denver's best hope is honestly to catch Memphis in a weird, it looks like it was going to be tough, but it turns out not to be, 4-5 mismatch.
Yeah.
Wind up winning that series with pace, and then actually have the Lakers knock off the Spurs and have Spurs Nuggets, or Lakers Nuggets. That actually might be Denver's best chance for getting to the WCF.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Which is crazy, but, I mean, it's probably true. But on the other hand, I'm also like, you know, I've tried to preach this thing with the Lakers where I'm like, look, they haven't really beaten great teams during the streak that they're on. But now they're starting to beat some better teams. They're starting to, you know, that I think that the Atlanta-Indiana back-to-back was a pretty good set for them. And they lost the Atlanta game, but they lost it under very specific circumstances.
I did get an email saying that because the league ruled that it should have been a foul, that they should just give the Lakers the win.
Yeah.
Which, that's an interesting take. At best, the Lakers could have been tied with Atlanta getting the ball with like 2.1 seconds left, but that's a sure win.
Yeah. That was a...
That was special.
That was special. Yeah, I never want to talk about the ankle injury ever again. It was, you know...
Oh my God. It was like three days of writing about it.
The best decision I made last week was when I was like, because in the first I was like, you know, I don't even have an opinion on this. Like, who cares? Like, let go. And then you and I talked on the pod, and it got me thinking, and I decided to go ahead and put my opinion out there on Twitter, and that was like the worst decision I made last week. I just should have shut up and been like, I don't have an opinion on this. Just
there's so many times where I have tweeted out a response to a conversation I'm not involved in. I've typed it out, and then I've deleted it without sending it, just thinking, I'm going to stay out of this. It's always the best decision I've made.
Which is, in a lot of ways, why you're a better person than I am.
The lesson in life, never have an opinion. No, that's not true. Never share your opinion.
So this is crazy tonight. This is absolutely... I flipped out when I saw this yesterday. Okay. 5 years ago, today, March 18th.
Yeah, this is very crazy.
The Boston Celtics ended the Houston Rockets' 22-game winning streak.
Yeah.
It was in Houston, but still... And then today, 5 years later, the Heat are on a 22-game winning streak, and they're playing in Boston.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. KG did not go through shoot-around this morning. That's a big thing.
Yeah, but he's still a game-time decision.
Still a game-time decision. I still believe he'll go because I tend to think that guys will play. It's an adductor strain. I tend to think guys will play through something like that if it's a game that they care about.
I would be shocked if he didn't give it a try.
Yeah.
Whether he plays 30 minutes, I don't know, but I would be shocked if he doesn't try.
And usually I'd be like, well, look, if they don't have KG, I mean, who the hell is going to play well for them? But it's the Celtics, so I'm they like, keep, you know what?
If anything, KG not playing guarantees that the streak ends tonight because they just find a way to reform whatever arm has just been cut off.
The worse they get, the better they play. It's like when a player gets injured, the ghost of Celtics past just floats in. It's like angels in the outfield.
My favorite part of the last, I don't know, 15 hours, 16 hours has been people boldly picking the Celtics to upset the Heat.
Yes.
Tonight, and I'm like, well, 23 straight games has happened once in 60 plus years. So I feel like it would be bold to pick Miami to win. Even I know the matchups, I know the injuries and all that stuff. This has only happened once.
Well, I'm like, okay, this is Boston's biggest. Like, every game against Miami is their biggest game of the year. Boston is red hot. There's got to be a point where emotionally, is for Miami, you run out of it. Like,
yeah.
You run out of pride. Like, you can only be like, you know, oh, I really, you know, we're doing something special. You only do that so many times before you're like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired, you know, we're going to, you know, we don't have it tonight. Because that's the whole thing is that's what's been impressive about the streak is, there have been nights when they haven't had it and they win anyway.
That, to me,
demonstrates a clear gap between them and everyone else.
Yeah, like, I mean, the Philadelphia game recently was an example of that.
Yep.
They didn't have it. They still won. Philly's not good, but...
And then yesterday, Toronto ties it in the third. By the way, I need to talk about Toronto for a little bit because I'm all irritated.
Let me hold on. Let me go grab my popcorn.
Toronto scraps and claws, clever girl, their way... into a they've got it down to 7. They had it was 16. They get it down to 7.
Yeah.
Okay. You're in range. You're in striking distance.
Why? Great movie, by the way.
Why? Available in 3D. Why on earth are you going to start? And what happened was DeRozan was part of what got them hot, and I understand this was part of what got them there, but you. Like, if you hit a couple mid-range jump shots, it's like, oh, things went your way. All right, now we're within range. Let's play some offense. Let's get some quality looks. And instead, they just kept going to DeMar DeRozan and Rudy Gay contested jumpers. Like, Toronto worked so hard to get themselves – they had it to four, and they kept taking these jumpers. And then it's two, and at that point, you know, they're like, oh, we're here. You know, we're going to do this. Like, we're just going to hit jump shots the rest of the way out. And meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, these are going to stop falling for you, and when they do, Miami's going to absolutely tear you apart. Because not only is it a bad shot that's unlikely to go in, but if you hit back iron on a mid-range jump shot from either wing, it tends to go straight back out. And then you've got a long rebound against the most dangerous team in transition. But these are the things that people don't factor. Like, don't take those shots. Do not give them opportunities to run. And that's exactly what happened. And then, you know, Norris Cole throws a perfect lob. Catch Wade's comment about that, by the way?
No, I missed it.
Oh, God. So Norris throws what was really, honestly, a perfect half-court lob. Norris Cole can't shoot. Okay, and Norris Cole is still young and makes a bunch of bad decisions. I really love his game. I love his defense. It's really fantastic. Like, he's
annoying.
He's able to not have to worry about, like, all the fundamental things that you have to pick up as a veteran and just really attack the ball.
Yeah, he's an annoying defender.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know, like, he defends like he doesn't know he can get beat.
Right, and he doesn't have to worry about it because the rotation defense, and that's one where I really think that it's okay to have that guy.
Oh, for sure.
Because in all honesty, and Celtics fans are going to hate this, Avery Bradley does a lot of that. Like, people don't want to talk about that, but that's a lot of what Avery does. Is Avery's able to do what he does because he's got help behind him. Anyways, he throws that half-court lob, which is great. And after the game, Wade says, I've been trying to get Mario to throw that lob like that forever.
Of course he did.
I said later that Mario Chalmers is Kit from A League of Their Own.
There's nothing he can do.
Nothing.
Nothing will ever be good enough. Maybe that's the only way to keep him grounded, though.
That's what I wonder. I wonder if Wade purposefully does it, because otherwise Mario gets complacent and then starts to feel like he the mental pressure on himself to focus and execute. He's like, Battier knows how to stay disciplined because that's all his game is. Like, right. His game is entirely discipline. And I think he was worried that Mario will get too impatient and start doing things. But part of it I don't understand, because I'm like, Mario's been really huge for them in the finals and in the playoffs when he's actually been like, you know what, they're worried about Wade and they're worried about James, and I've got an open lane. I'm going to the bucket. Like,
yeah.
You stepped up and made layups for them, which is big. When you got a guy that you're like, you know, and you can see that, you saw it last year, the Celtics were just pissed. Because they were like, God, we sent two guys to zone James on the wing. We kept the ball out of his hands, and we had nobody left. Like, who picked up – who's supposed to pick up Rio? And I was like, I can't pick him up. I got to keep an eye on Wade coming from the backside corner. I can't pick him up. I got to keep Bosch.
Right.
And then you're like, what do we do? So, you know, I just feel like – I really do think that Chalmers gets a bad rap. I just thought that was totally unnecessary. Like, Wade does so many things to him. I'm like, it's so unnecessary.
I love it. I think it's great. One quick thing about Avery Bradley and knowing that rotations are going to be there. I think that's what you want for a young defender, though, right? I mean, you want him to feel like, I can defend aggressively because I know my teammates are going to be behind me. And yes, that gives him an advantage that not a lot of other guards necessarily get, but I don't know that he should be penalized for that. In terms of like public opinion.
I would agree to a certain extent. I'm only saying that he can afford to risk making mistakes because of that system versus where other defenders would do what he did and people would be like, he's got to quit gambling.
Sure, but on the flip side of that, there are guys in this league who have that support and don't defend that way.
Yeah, now I totally agree with you on this point. That's a really great point that you're making, because I often everyone kind of thinks of young defenders as the worst thing that they do is they're too eager, and it's often the opposite. They're uncertain.
Yeah,
they play back, and they, you know, and it's they're not willing to go up and guard the triple threat position, or they're not getting up to keep an eye because they're falling back because they're not used to guys. You know, college guys aren't going to just take the ball and shoot it. It's like if you give a guy a gap, and if you give a wing a gap in the NBA, and he's like, well, I've got the shot. You know,
right.
Monta Ellis have it all.
Well, and the thing about that is, just the way the rules are now, the best way you can defend on the perimeter in terms of like man-to-man is take away space. Like,
yeah.
You can't stop guys necessarily, but if you take away space, especially if they on a pull-up jumper, like that's really the only thing you can do. And And guys like Avery Bradley, like, he takes away space. Like, very few do.
If you take away space on a pull-up jumper, you're a dirty player. You should be banned.
Oh, that's true. I forgot.
That's the reality of it. So who do you like tonight, man?
I don't know. I tend to get into this kind of mode.
It's weird because you made the point earlier. You're like, well, they won 22 in a row. Nobody's won 23.
Like, the matchup is the matchup, and that makes me think Miami should absolutely win this game. But this has happened once in history. So I think I got to roll with the Celtics.
See, and I end up going completely away from the context of the streak, and to me, it's all about Boston and how they respond in emotional situations at home.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't actually like them if the Heat were banged up. I would think that they might drop this one, but
you're saying Wade should get injured at shoot around today.
If Wade gets injured, I'm taking Miami by a mile. I'm definitely taking the Celtics today, mostly on account of, like I said, it's that emotional factor. And you have to understand that for me, that's painful to talk about because I always want to get away from those kind of cliches. And don't get me wrong, the players and coaches really believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
George Karl had a quote of the other day. I have to like look at it. It was after that Memphis game. It was something that, like, he said, like, heart and guts and toughness and glory. He said the word glory in it.
Glory.
Yeah, and
was he talking about Morgan Freeman movies?
I was just really shocked at the level of kind of what he said in terms of the cliches. But they, you know, he was genuine. They really believe in that stuff. So yeah. It's definitely a palpable thing. I think for the Celtics, it's a little bit more palpable than for any other team in the league.
Ah, screw it. This will be fun for them to win. I want the Heat to win. I legitimately, like, I like seeing history.
Oh, God, I want them to win 33 just to say I saw this. I want them to win 34 so I could say I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just cool. I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm switching my pick. I'm going with the Heat.
This game was, I would have picked the Celtics six weeks ago, so I'm already locked in. You know me. I'm always taking green.
This is going to be a really obvious statement, and you're just going to be able to respond with, well, yeah, math. But if you think about, like, it's weird to think, like, the Heat were 29-14, and now they're 51-14. Like, that's just such a weird rip in the space-time continuum in terms of record. Like, you obviously just don't see that very often. It's weird to think, like, if you looked at them at 29-14, you would never have thought they're going to be 51-14 at some point in the season.
Right.
It's weird. It's a weird thing to think about.
Here's what I think is nuts, is they've done all this, and, like, their gap over San Antonio is like they've got a one game lead over San Antonio for home court throughout the entire playoffs.
Yeah, that's weird. That's definitely weird.
This is the problem I have with Denver too, where Denver's now won 11 straight. That's a crazy winning streak.
That's incredible.
It's not absurd, but that's a really great win streak, right? They are five games back of Oklahoma City for the division. They have almost no shot at the division.
Yeah.
At the division.
Yeah. Five with what, like 15 to play?
This is a good NBA season.
We're having a good one.
But yeah, you talk about Miami. Like, they haven't experienced a loss since January.
They have as many wins in a row as Cleveland has all season. Same with Phoenix and New Orleans. They have more wins in a row than Orlando and Charlotte have won this season. Like, it's incredible.
At their schedule, since February 1st, but, you know, they lost that game to the Pacers. Imagine, and it was a 13-point loss, and it was a great win for the Pacers, but imagine if they you know, won that game. I know it's like ifs, but if they won that game and they lost a double overtime game, that double overtime game to the Celtics, right?
Yeah.
And before that, they won four straight. 4, 5, 6, 7. That's an extra 7 wins. They'd be at 29 right now.
It's possible. If you think about it, they could easily be 65-0 right now. I actually would like, I mean, I'm not going to do this, but I would like to go back to the episode after Indiana beat them and wonder what we were saying about them.
Yeah,
probably not. It's probably not.
Don't invite the listeners to do that.
It's probably not too different from what we like. We've been pretty consistent on them all year. Like, eh, they really don't have a challenger in the East. Blah blah blah. But I don't know. There's something historic about them now.
I went on like five radio spots in the month of February talking about how Indiana was like the one team that could give them a run and could really challenge them, wouldn't win, but was a serious contender and could really mess with them. And then Miami just blasted them off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Like, thanks, guys. Thanks for that. Appreciate that. And I could just hear all my radio guys being like, good call, genius.
Yeah. Good one.
Expert senior NBA blogger.
What's the line tonight?
It's the Heat are favored by 5. It was 6. It's down to 5.
I kind of like the Celtics there, regardless of the win or not.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking the points. No question.
Yeah.
Is Dallas done, by the way?
I don't believe so. I actually said this a couple days ago, and I still believe it. I think that they're going to be one of the hardest teams to face the rest of the season.
You'd said that, and we talked about it, and I didn't believe you, and then I kind of looked at it, and you're like, oh, hey, you're right. And then, I don't know, that Spurs loss, I felt like maybe a backbreaker for them.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, how many times have I said this, but like, a team was a Vince Carter jumper away.
I'm really getting worried Portland's going to make it.
They're I'm really 3.5 back. No, I don't know. I mean, they'd have to get – it's what we said about the Lakers for a while. They'd have to get to 500 before I believe it.
Because part of it, though, is I really don't want to lose Houston. I don't want to lose Houston in the playoffs. I want Houston to rattle off like a 5 or 6-game winning streak.
Yeah.
So we can get them locked in. I don't want to lose them. They're too fun. No offense to Utah, Portland, or Dallas, but I don't want to watch your teams at all.
No, and people – still get mad at James Harden for whatever reason. Like, he's fun to watch. He's a guy you want to see in the playoffs.
Mad as James Harden.
People, like, get mad because he flops or, I don't know, he has a beard or he's left-handed. I don't know. People get mad for dumb reasons. And
people get mad because he beat them. That's what
right, exactly. And they're like,
I remember this the other day. I need to mention this. I was thinking, because my son's birthday's coming up. And I remember, like, that was a crazy year for me because the Grizzlies won their first ever playoff series. And their matchup against Oklahoma City, I thought they'd get wiped out, and so they won game one, and it was like, oh, wow, they're really in this. Harden hit a bunch of contested threes during that series, and I actually said Harden was playing well above his ceiling. I haven't really been called out on that, and I didn't mention how dumb I was for saying that. I really didn't think James Harden. I bought into it next year. The next year, I was like, holy crap, he really is this good. And whether he was at that point or not, it doesn't change the fact that he could have been hitting that ceiling at that point. And hitting that level at that point and just evolving to there, and I should have been able to recognize that. And I didn't, and I thought he was playing over his head like Danny Green did the first two rounds of the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And I was mistaken, so my bad.
Harden was one guy I always had a good read on, and people thought I was insane when I said this, but like during the whole like Steph Curry, Brandon Jennings, Tyreek Evans rookie year, and James Harden's just kind of like off in the background, not really doing a whole lot, people were like, oh, he's a bust. I was like, well, he's on a good team.
Am I crazy to think that that your pickup game is not entirely dissimilar from James Harden's?
It used to be. It used to be in the similar style. Now I just go three-point line, I just chuck. I don't really have it in me to play hard. It's weird, like watching people like really take it seriously and stuff now, I just think like, I could turn an ankle. Like my ankle screwed up enough. I don't need to be a hero anymore. I'm good just whipping the ball around the perimeter, finding guys inside on cuts, and actually my favorite thing to do is post up. I love posting up. You post up. I love getting matched up against a point guard across the aisle and posting up. That's my favorite thing to do. So I become Mark Jackson without the preaching.
Without the preaching. Preach on, preacher. okay, so we got one more podcast tomorrow, and then you'll have guest stuff for us all week.
That's the plan.
I may be forced to put one together with Goodman on Wednesday, which I will not enjoy, so we may have two for you on Wednesday. We'll see how that goes. And then from there, we'll catch you tomorrow, and we'll recap Miami, Boston, and take a look at everything else that happened in the NBA tonight, if anything happens of relevance.
And let me tweet me and let me know what you need me to bet on the roulette table. I'm in Vegas.
Take that 16-1 odds, baby. This is the year to do it, man.
If you win, I will just pretend that I never placed the bet.
so scrupulous.
Absolutely.
By the way, somebody said they were annoyed at us thanking each other at the end of the podcast. That bugged me. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm just saying thanks to Zach for putting us together and going through the effort of talking to me. And
I'm saying thanks
for the great job that he does. This is his baby.
And I'm saying thanks for making the time during your day to do this. It's usually about an hour out of our day. Record.
And though we enjoy it.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say. Matt, I'm not going to thank you, but I greatly appreciate your time and effort today.
I cherish you, Zach.
Well, that just got awkward.